Hey everybody, welcome into the Green 19 podcast brought to you by JS Online and Packers News. I'm Ryan Wood alongside my co-host and colleague Tom Silverstein. And Tom, the busy portion of the schedule has really hit early this season. Obviously short week, West Coast trip, big game Sunday night, San Francisco 49ers. I have no idea what day it is. It's just kind of thrown all together.
Yeah. It's been crazy. It's never a good time to go out to San Francisco for the Packers. I mean, maybe last year when COVID struck and they had all those injuries, I guess. But this is, you know, they need as much time as possible to bounce back from this Lions game. Just not that they played terribly, but the short week and then having to go out west is not easy on the body. And LaFleur practiced in full on Wednesday and Thursday. No pads Thursday, but you know, he had them out there for a good long time. So they are definitely concerned about the 49ers.
Maybe the biggest reason why they could use it not being a short week and use the full 7-day schedule, Elgton Jenkins in that ankle.
Yeah.
We had no idea until we showed up to practice on Wednesday, and Elgton Jenkins is the only player who's not out there, which was stunning because he played all 65 snaps Monday night against the Lions. And talking with Matt LaFleur today, he said he has no idea when the injury happened because Elgton Jenkins was on the field for all 65 snaps, and he didn't even find out that he had an ankle injury until after the game. And obviously he's going to get the week to give it a go and take some rest and see if he can play Sunday night. But that's a big deal for this team. Elgton Jenkins has played a fine left tackle. He's an anomaly in this league, a guy that can actually be a Pro Bowl left guard and step out to the blind side. Do you think he's going to play Sunday night? And what do they do if he doesn't?
Well, this is a guy who missed one practice because of injury throughout his entire Packers career. So, and the other was because of an illness. So I think if there's anybody who's going to be able to play through an injury, it's him. And I don't get the sense like they are scrambling, scared, whatever. It's just the vibe I get is that they expect him to play. But man, you know, what if he rolls the ankle again, you know, and on the first series or something? Who's it going to be? Now, I think their best move is to send Billy Turner over to left tackle, but maybe they give Yash Nyman a chance. I mean, maybe they just figure it's time. He's on the 53-man roster. Why is he on there if they're not ever going to use him?
Do you want Yash Nyman protecting Aaron Rodgers' blind side against Nick Bosa?
Against Nick Bosa? No. I mean, not if I'm the Green Bay Packers, but I would put Mercedes Lewis over there every single down. You know, and have the running back chip. But at some point, I mean, you're on the roster for a reason. You got to play. And that's just might be what they have to do. But consider if that were the case, Nyman at left tackle, John Runyon at left guard, rookie Myers at center, and rookie right guard Royce Newman. Boy, that would be something.
Isn't the same able to be said about Dennis Kelly, though? Like, this is why they signed Dennis Kelly, was to give veteran depth at right tackle in case you needed to slide over Billy Turner. Yeah. I mean, this was the whole he's in the Rick Wagner role, and Rick Wagner was a godsend for this team in 2020, and obviously not here. But Dennis Kelly's that guy now. That he's the veteran right tackle depth that if you have an emergency, which being down to your third string left tackle by definition is an emergency, you slide Billy Turner, who I thought played a very fine left tackle against anybody not named the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year.
Yeah, right.
Granted, every offensive lineman on the Packers struggled against Tampa Bay last year, but other than that, week 17 in Chicago, divisional game against, you know, on an offensive line. Granted, he didn't go up against Aaron Donald, but that offensive line neutralized Aaron Donald in the divisional game against the Rams. Billy Turner played a fine left tackle, and if you're the Packers, I would think you feel secure with Dennis Kelly coming in at right tackle in that type of situation.
Well, we don't know how he's practiced. We don't know how he's looked. As you know, LaFleur always says, they're going to put the five best out there. And, you know, Dennis Kelly, maybe the matchup against Arik Armstead is really bad. You know, maybe the matchup of Nyman versus as dumb as that sounds, of Nyman versus Bosa is better than Kelly versus Armstead. I don't know. Kelly's a 16-game starter last year. I guess we'll find out. I think all of this tells me that Elgton Jenkins is going to play. So it may be a moot point, but it's something to watch. No question, we will be looking at warm-ups, you know, before the game and seeing if Elgton Jenkins is around.
I tend to be with you that I think Elgton Jenkins is going to play. Just the fact that he did finish the game and played all 65 snaps and his head coach had no idea that he had an ankle injury, or so he says, that tells you that he was able to play effectively on it, unless it's one of those situations like Lucas Patrick, the very final snap of the opener against New Orleans, he had the concussion. Unless it was the last play of the game, which I don't know if it is. We don't know when it happened, but he was able to play effectively on that ankle. And you know, at some point, you know, I get that after the game, it can, you know, stiffen up and it's not as loose. But at some point, you give him the week. And
if anybody doesn't need to practice, it's Elgton Jenkins.
Absolutely.
I mean, I just think that they can throw. I think they're being cautious. Like, okay, give him the week to recover. We'd rather him be full strength come, you know, the San Francisco game. And if he doesn't get in two practices that aren't even in pads, then fine. All they care about is watch tape on Nick Bosa and block Nick Bosa. That's all they really need.
On the other side of the line of scrimmage, you mentioned Eric Armstead. He's got an adductor, which you just taught me before we came on what the heck that is, because I've never heard of that. I thought those D's were B's and it was an abductor. And I was like, oh, that sounds scary, actually. I don't know if that's legal. So
it is an abductor. It's misspelled
on the injury report. Yeah. This is how clueless I am and what the heck this muscle. Would you like to educate people on what an abductor is? Because I don't know what it is, Tom.
I'm gonna Google it right now because I have never heard of an abductor unless it's something. Oh yeah, abductor. Maybe I was wrong.
Double two D's there. Adductor. That's really hard to say. First of all.
I was thinking of abductor. The abductor is to adduct the femur to the hip joint. Ooh. That's like
thank you, Dr. Google.
Yeah, so that's kind of like in his hip.
So he's not been abducted. That's good.
No.
He has an adductor, though.
Yeah.
And he's not practiced the past 2 days.
They have a ton of guys but they've got four guys who haven't practiced. And, you know, they're kind of banged up. If Eric Armstead doesn't play, that's a big loss for them and gain for the Packers, who would love to not see him there.
Would that make you more likely to sit Elgton Jenkins perhaps and put Billy Turner over? And
you got to play him
if he can go.
If you can roll him out on there, you gotta do it.
Week three, short week, doesn't play any factor in that at all.
No, you're playing the 49ers, and this is a team that you may be in the race for home field advantage with, ultimately. And so I wouldn't hold him back, you know.
On the other side of the ball, offense, you talk about the injuries for the 49ers. Who the heck is going to be their running back this week?
That's a crazy what's happened to them. So they start the season with Raheem Mostert, who all Packers fans know
that
Raheem Mostert is. He's the guy who got all the yards in the NFC Championship.
What was it, like 6,000?
Yeah, and the Packers still haven't tackled him. You know, so he got hurt in the opener. They were already missing Jeff Wilson, who got hurt. He's another guy who ran for like a 35-yard touchdown against the Packers. He was hurt in offseason and hasn't been healthy all year. And then they bring out Elijah Mitchell, and he plays, and he hurts his shoulder. And I think he didn't practice.
The last 2 days he did not practice. That's correct.
So they went and picked up a guy. They claimed a guy off waivers from Baltimore last week. And then this week they signed a guy off of – whose practice squad was it? I forgot now. Anyway, they added another – running back to their group. So I don't know. Oh, Jacques Patrick. Yeah. I think he was either.
And Jermichael Hasty is out with an not practicing with an ankle.
Yeah, so that's a big difference. I mean, for the Packers, number one thing is to stop the 49ers' run game. You can't let them just run all over you like they did. You have to defend George Kittle, and you have to defend Deebo Samuel and all those guys, Brandon Ayuk, all the guys that they throw in motion and everything. But number one is you have to stop the run. And so maybe this gives them a chance. I don't know.
Yeah, I asked Kenny Clark today this question kind of foolishly because it is the 49ers. But, yeah, every defense wants to make the opposing offense one-dimensional. It makes it so much more easier to play an offense when they can only do one thing. This 49ers offense has a guy named George Kittle. He's pretty darn good. You look at this Packers defense and look at what Hockenson did against them just last week. Historically and even recently, they can get devoured by really good tight ends. Kittle is as good as it gets. So George Kittle will destroy you if you let him. So you got to guard up against Jimmy Garoppolo and George Kittle in that passing game. I ask Kenny Clark, you make them one-dimensional, which way do you go? What's the priorities of the run game? Because, you know, he was on the field for those 300,000 yards in the NFC Championship game 2 years ago. He remembers that well. He's not the only one in this Packers defense that remembers that. It is stopping the run game. Now, it might help if they know who the running back will be, but that's the priority.
And it's been really through the first two games. That's what Joe Barry tries to do, is he wants to stop the run first. And we saw that against the Lions. The only problem was, you know, then they were only rushing four guys, and, you know, they didn't get any pressure because those guys are thinking run first. So with San Francisco, maybe it's not a bad thing. You know, maybe playing his five-man front isn't a bad thing for the Packers, because maybe one-dimensional being Jimmy Garoppolo isn't the worst thing ever. I don't know. I just know that Kyle Shanahan will dissect all of their weaknesses, whatever weaknesses they have, and you know, he'll just pick at them, and he'll watch what the Lions did with Hockenson. You're right. And Kittle's going to get his yards. You just can't let him score. You can't keep letting him score. That's the big thing.
You can't let him devour your soul, because he'll do that.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, the thing with this Kyle Shanahan run scheme is it almost doesn't matter who the running back is. You plug a guy in. It's very similar to his father, Mike Shanahan, back with those Denver Broncos teams. It almost didn't matter who they put in there as a 1,000-yard rusher. You never heard of the guy. You plug him into the Denver Broncos outside zone scheme, and he's got 1,000 yards. Kyle Shanahan's been much the same way. So it's so deceptive, and there's so much camouflage. It's so difficult to read your keys and have the eyes to where they need to be and all those things. It almost doesn't matter who the running back is in that scheme.
Yeah, and, you know, both these guys, Matt LaFleur and Joe Barry, have plenty of experience playing against Kyle Shanahan, and I don't think anybody knows Shanahan maybe as well as LaFleur. So they got to come up with a plan, and I think part of that plan is to try to do what they did to the Lions, which is get the ball into Aaron Jones's hands any way you can and keep some drives alive, you know?
Well, they're going to see that. They're going to see that two shell until they can prove that they can run it, run a defense out of it.
Well,
right?
It's funny. I asked Nathaniel Hackett, because these guys play that cover three that Seattle played so effectively when they went to the Super Bowl. And so I, you know, joked with Hackett, well, so they're, you know, a devout cover three team, so they'll come out and cover two, right? You know, which is what everybody is doing to the Packers. So that'll be interesting whether they do show a little bit more cover two, or they just play their defense and say, go ahead, Rodgers, see if you can beat us.
You mentioned Matt LaFleur and Kyle Shanahan. Obviously, they go way, way, way back. I thought it was notable, if not surprising, that Matt LaFleur said there's no bad blood there after the offseason that was. And obviously, the 49ers wanted Aaron Rodgers very badly. They reached out before the draft. Hey, is there any chance there's a trade?
Let me just ask, quick no. Why would there be bad blood if a guy calls about, hey, are you guys dealing your quarterback?
There shouldn't be. That's why it's not surprising.
I don't really get that.
It's not surprising.
Is that a social media thing, or has there been reports that LaFleur is ticked off about that?
No, I just, you know, I honestly don't. I'm not surprised that there wasn't bad blood. I'm just making the note, Spoon. I'm just
like Kyle Shanahan, check. Yeah, good move.
Matt LaFleur said this week. Yeah,
yeah,
right.
You got to check into it, don't you?
Wouldn't it be kind of surprising if he didn't want Aaron Rodgers on his team,
yeah,
like the reigning MVP?
That, or didn't want to find out whether he was actually being traded.
Right.
You know?
That's,
I mean,
due diligence.
Would you call your friend, one of your best friends? And then,
so, hey, you know, do you want to send him MVP quarterback my way? My guy's Jimmy Garoppolo. We're looking for an upgrade.
Yeah.
So no bad blood there. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see another rendition of student, pupil versus the teacher. No Robert Saleh as far as defensive coordinator. He's the head coach of the New York Jets now. No Mike LaFleur. He's the offensive coordinator.
Right.
Matt LaFleur's little brother is the offensive coordinator for Saleh with the Jets. So it's a different makeup on staff, but you still have that pupil versus teacher dynamic. And I think it's pretty clear that the one time that they really had full, you know, throw out last year's game, it was the JV 49ers. Everyone was hurt. To talk about the injury report this week for the 49ers is nothing compared to what it was last year midseason. The one time they've had full teams, Kyle Shanahan got the better of that matchup.
Yeah, that's the way it's been. So I just think that this is a game Matt LaFleur, the Packers need to play well. I don't know if they absolutely have to win it. They're on the road, tough opponent, but you know they need to get over the hump and beat the real 49ers. You know, last year's game didn't mean squat.
Nothing.
And they've been blown out in the other two games. So this is a chance for them to stand up and say, okay, this is who we are. We're NFC leaders. We're going to be the one that everybody's going to be chasing, because you sure haven't looked like that the first 2 weeks.
Don't they need that, too, just to get back? It's been such a weird two-week start to this season. And, you know, I thought it was really interesting this week when Davante Adams said that, and he was being asked specifically about the lack of production from MVS, but he said what was really, I thought, a boilerplate statement, that he's never seen a season, he's been here since 2014, where there's been so much freak out going into week three.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? That's probably true, but he's also never been a part of this hyperbolic last dance or whatever you want to call it season where there's no guarantee of 2022. It is now or never. It is all in for 2021. And when that's the reality, it's a pressure cooker that magnifies every week. And 2 weeks feels like more because you don't know what's going to happen after this.
Yeah, it sort of does. But I guess I've been around here too long to know that, you know, and I've seen seasons where they've gotten off to lousy starts and the season looked like a wash, and then all of a sudden you pick up steam in the second half. So
2016.
It's fine to, yeah, in 2010. I mean, they had all these injuries, and they wound up galvanizing and going to the Super Bowl and winning the Super Bowl. But these are things we're talking about now because we're in the now, and this next game will have some kind of impact on their record and where their standing is on in the NFC, and I just think Matt LaFleur needs a signature win, and this would be a signature win for him, and then I think they could sort of take off.
1-2 doesn't sound that bad. Look, 2014, they were 1-2, and that was the RELAX season with Aaron Rodgers. Relax, and they go on, and they were 5 minutes from the Super Bowl, right? 1-2 doesn't sound that bad, but then you look at the schedule. They've got Pittsburgh coming the next week. I know it's a home game. That's a game they could lose. 1-3, you start getting a little hairy there. So
yeah.
It's one of those things that can snowball on itself, and you want to prevent that. You want to stop that from before it can have a chance to really start to happen.
Yeah, the thing that we really need to see, I think, is some gradual improvement on defense.
Mm-hmm.
We need to see Joe Barry's defense be consistent and make some plays. I mean, you know, the Lions, you got an interception late in the game when Goff's trying to do anything you can to, make a play. The two other big plays are Goff losing the ball because it's wet. You know, he fumbles a snap and then one slips out of his hand. So this is an ongoing thing where they're going to have to figure out or we're going to have to see whether their defense can advance. And we saw some changes last week with Kevin King in the slot. That was really surprising to me. I've never thought of him as a slot guy.
The way Joe Barry discussed it too is that it's one of those things that it could be someone different every week. So you going into that game, they're thinking Quintez Cephas is going to be the slot guy. It's not a very fast guy versus not a very fast guy, more of a big rangy guy. So maybe they like the matchup there. But then Matt LaFleur says he thinks it's a good thing for them. He liked how Kevin King looked like in the slot. First time ever doing it. Is that something you think will continue, or is that going to be kind of a matchup based deal?
My mouth went agape when I think it was Jerry Gray said that Kevin King was a very good tackler.
Yeah, right.
Like having him around the line of scrimmage and closer to the quarterback.
Not with that shoulder.
Do you want me to show you the stats on how many missed tackles he's had in the last couple of years? No, he did have a really nice blitz and knocked down Jared Goff. I mean, it was perfectly timed blitz. I thought he looked pretty good in that. But I just don't know if physically he can handle being up around there all the time. And, you know, like you said, with his shoulders and all the injuries he's had, why would you, have him closer to the run game? It just doesn't seem like the guy. And I wonder if they'll develop Stokes in that role at some point once he knows the defense and has some playing experience.
You talk to people that know DB play at a high level, and they'll tell you that Kevin King tackles like a guy's protecting his shoulder. Mm-hmm. And off the top of my head, I don't know how many there were, but he led the team in missed tackles last season.
Yes, he did.
So not ideal for what you want in the slot.
No, and you know, a guy like Stokes, think about if you have him you have him in the slot position and you blitz him, the point from point A to him getting to the quarterback, point B, is really quick because he is so fast and he's got size. They got to be thinking about that. I don't know if it's the right time, though.
Is it too much for a rookie?
Yeah.
Put it on a rookie's plate?
It could be. I mean, I saw, well, no, not even Casey Hayward. He played outside. I think Woodson was still playing some slot when he came in. He might have played some slot, Casey Hayward. But you have to be a really heady player, and he's also doesn't fit the, well, neither does Kevin King, but the, quick-fitted, be able to, cut real easily in the middle of the field. I don't know.
You know there's an easy solution to this, right?
What's that?
Put Jaire Alexander in the slot.
Well, yeah, I will be examining that later this week, Sunday.
That's a must-read, everyone.
Because, yeah, that's something they got to consider.
I mean, that seems like a glaringly obvious solution to this. Because, look, you're Eric Stokes. You're going in your third game. You're a rookie. You're a new guy here, and there's so much more to absorb and so much more facets of the game when you're inside. Now all of a sudden you got to be very active in the run game. It's not just putting you on the island outside and cover this guy and get your assignment right. There's so many more things that you got to be looking at.
I think it's a matter, as Jerry Gray said, of getting your best three corners on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what they did, and they deemed Kevin King as the third best, or second best, Alexander, King, Stokes, and they threw Chandon Sullivan out of the mix. Well, if you ask me by the end of this year, King will be the fourth, and maybe Sullivan is up, you know, at number three, and Stokes is number two. And so why not? At some point, I wouldn't be surprised if Alexander and Stokes are the starters and Sullivan's back at nickel and King is the dime.
When you look at the defense as a whole, one of the fun things at the start of every season when you only have two games to go off of is the small sample size alert stats. And probably my favorite small sample size alert stat, the Packers, just what the numbers say, they're a top 10 defense according to NFL ranks in yards.
By yards.
Yeah. Top 10 defense. They were actually ninth in defense last year in yards. The difference being they were 13th in scoring. They're 23rd in scoring, giving up 27.5 yeah. points per game. But
it's all about points.
The ultimate small sample size alert. They are 10th in yards defensively. Look, they have not looked in any way, shape, or form like a top 10 defense. And
where do they rank in rushing yards?
That's a good question. Let's look that up right now. Fourth to the bottom.
Wow. See that?
139.5 yards per game.
I guess that's surprising me a little because if you think about it, they didn't let Kamara go off. DeAndre Swift didn't really go off on them. You know, Jameis Winston got a bunch of yards.
He did.
So that's
and so did Jared Goff, actually.
Yeah, and Goff did too.
Which, that's surprising.
But, you know, on the surface, when you just look at it, you go, eh, they've done okay against the run. I mean, they got to do, I think like all the coaches said today, they have to do better on first and second down and stop giving teams, you know, second and six.
And they have to get
and five.
Any pass rush on third down.
Yeah.
Any pass. They have one sack all season. It's a team sack.
Yeah. And he's got to be quicker to blitz. You know, he shouldn't have to be told by LaFleur that, hey, you need to start bringing some heat.
And we should get into that. So Joe Barry, he was very particular, mind you. Joe Barry was not approached by Matt LaFleur and told play pressure or coverage at halftime of the Monday night game against Detroit. It was actually on the sideline right before halftime. So make sure you mark that down. And Joe Barry said that he was irate and furious that the defense didn't get the ball back for the offense that was getting the ball to start the third quarter because instead they gave up the field goal at the end of the half. And that during that drive or somewhere around that drive on the sideline, not in the locker room, Joe Barry was approached and Matt LaFleur said this thing. And Joe Barry's all for it, he said. He said the collaboration is great. He's the head coach. He loves having the input. What did you make of it?
I think Matt LaFleur did what he should do, which is as a head coach and you got a first-year coordinator and you brought him in, he's your guy. It's not like he's Mike Pettine, who's been defensive coordinator for decade,
ever,
a head coach, you know, comes from Buddy Ryan, Rex Ryan, you know, Baltimore. It's a different animal when you're dealing with a guy like Patton. You don't just totally discard what he's doing. But with Barry, he's a first-year coordinator. And if you don't like the way that the game is going, you got to say something. And so he did, and I have no problem with that. The problem I have is, was he going to make that adjustment on his own if he didn't say anything?
The thing that I go back to is, what is coaching? Coaching, by definition, is knowing your personnel and putting your players in the best position to succeed. Mm-hmm. And it's not just knowing who you have as far as your personnel, it's knowing who you don't have. And when you go into a game knowing you don't have Za'Darius Smith, he's your game wrecker, he's your top pass rusher by far.
Right.
And then who you do have is Kenny Clark, at times a very dominant run defender. Can get pressure on the quarterback,
pass rusher than he's been.
But not going to take a game. Well, he's not Aaron Donald, mm-mm, right? You've got Preston Smith, who literally took a pay cut last year because of a lack of pass rush. You got Rashawn Gary, former 12th overall pick, that just he's shown in flashes, hasn't been consistent. I don't know how you go into that game knowing that's who you got and who you don't have. And you're not already thinking you've got to be creative from a blitz package standpoint to get home, mm-hmm, on the quarterback, because that's what your personnel is.
And knowing the history of Jared Goff, you want to get in that guy's face. You know, he did exactly what you don't want, which is sat in the pocket 13 of 16 for 160 yards or whatever the heck it was, and two touchdowns. And you can't let that happen. You got to be able to defend that guy. And so, you know, the same is going to be true with Garoppolo. How are they going to pressure him? Kyle Shanahan's going to sit there and have, you know, all kinds of screens and, you know, things like that if they do decide to pressure. But they got to mix it up, and they've got to be a step ahead of the 49ers. And they were a step behind the Lions.
How much do you think the defense – I asked Joe Barry this, the fact that they played basically – the only two significant players on the defensive side of the ball that they played at all in the preseason was Chris Barnes and Eric Stokes. Mm-hmm. Nobody else. You've got a new scheme. It's a new defense. They didn't play it. They practiced it. They didn't play it in the preseason. Is that in any way, shape, or form kind of leading to this slow start?
Could be. I mean, I thought that they should have played the defense. I was okay with LaFleur sitting the offense because those guys have been together playing the same scheme for 3 years. But this defense, I kind of thought they needed to play at full speed. It didn't have to be a long time, but I don't know. Is the reason they lost to New Orleans because they didn't play in the preseason? I don't know. I don't know if I would go that far. There just was some kind of disconnect there that they weren't ready to play. Week two, you know, they're better all around. And then if they play really well this week, then I'll say, okay, you were right. You know, health is more important. But if they just look like a team that, you know, and they're still making these coverage mistakes where they don't know where guys are supposed to be and all that, then I'm going to question it.
And I think that's what's the most fascinating thing, to bring it full circle, about this week, is this is a really intriguing litmus test for this team where they're at 3 weeks into the season. This is a game that good teams can lose. Like, they can lose this game and they play well and they can still be a good team. It's a tough road environment, short week, West Coast trip. It's their first actual road game since before the pandemic, because obviously it was supposed to be New Orleans, and Hurricane Ida moved that game to Jacksonville. There were more Packers fans than Saints fans in Jacksonville. This is the first road game that they've had in almost 2 years. So good teams can lose this, but how do you play? What's the litmus test? Does the defense actually look like they have a clue, or is it like it's been the past 2 weeks? Offensively, are they able to look like the unit that came out against Detroit or the unit that scored 3 points against the Saints? It's the litmus test this week more than anything. Can they get back on the right track in terms of how they play on the field on both sides?
Yeah, I mean, you look at a team like Dallas. They couldn't feel too bad about leaving Tampa with the way they, you know, they just ran up tons of yards.
Absolutely.
That, I'm sure that carried over, you know, to their game against the Chargers. And so that's just one example. But, yeah, if you play that type of game, that's huge for you. Even if you do lose it, and you lose it on a field goal or something like that, it still can have some benefit.
So we will find that out Sunday night. And anything else, I got to be honest, on a personal note, I love San Francisco. It's going to be an enjoyable time.
I've been there a lot of times.
You're probably
times
sick of San Francisco
years.
By
no,
now, aren't you?
No, I've never been sick of San Francisco, and I never will.
Did you leave your heart in San Francisco, Tom?
No, but my gut's going to be there. I'm going to partake in some good sourdough while I'm out there.
Good sourdough. That's the recommendation, huh? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah, I don't know San Francisco as well as you, but I'm looking forward to being out there. I'm looking forward to seeing to just learning more about this team, and I think that'll be really interesting going into the Sunday night game. Make sure you stay to Packers News for all full coverage of this big Week 3 showdown. Kenny Clark called it a rivalry game today. You know, mm-hmm. These two teams know each other well, and they both know that they're, you know, it's September, but they're playing for something that could potentially matter down the road. So stay tuned to Packers News. Until then, yep. He's Tom. I'm Ryan. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to the Green 19 podcast.